Shalom. I'm Jonathan Feldstein. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this, all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel, giving you a window to look through, experience and aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co. or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And yes, I still say Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to share an exciting opportunity with you. And please feel free to share this with others who you will know will find it of interest. So I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. I can never have too many opportunities to connect with today's guest, a good friend, Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz. Occasionally we get to do it in person, but more frequently it's like this, electronically. But I'll take what I can get electronically and certainly in person. And next time, God willing, a cup of coffee at least together. Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz is the features article writer at Israel 365 News. In the past 9 years, he's written thousands of articles, but he's much more than that. He's eclectic. He's a rabbi. He's a cook. I'm not a chef, more than a cook. He's a deep thinker. And he, like myself and everything that we do at the Genesis 123 Foundation to build bridges between Jews and Christians, is one of these great, unapologetic Jewish leaders who takes on topics and issues and people that sometimes others would give pushback for. And he does that with a great, strong sense of his own Jewish identity. And today, and we're deliberately doing it today on the eve of Passover in order that we can talk about his brand new book. It's not his first book. He's got a couple of them, and he's got a couple in his brain and that he's desiring to get out into bound copies. But today we're going to talk about something that's really important, brand new, and very, very topical. His book is called Return of the Red Heifers. Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz, really is a great way to begin my day today. Welcome back as a guest on Inspiration from Zion.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. Definitely one of the most impressive introductions I've had. You left out one important thing that I actually never told you, which was when I first moved to Israel in 1991, I was a dairy farmer on Kibbutz Deliyahu for 4.5 years, and my job was to raise the baby cows.
So you had the relationship with cows for a while.
I came to Torah through cows. It was really my pathway through the very aromatic dairy shed.
Is that in your book? I haven't had, but full disclosure, I won't usually do a conversation with somebody who has a book that I haven't even at least glanced at, but I know the topic and I know the author here, so we're having the conversation. But is that in your book about your stay Eliyahu cows?
I might have mentioned it in my bio, though I'm not sure. And don't take it personally. I myself didn't even hold a physical copy of my book until I think it was like Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. I went to the office and got it. It's that new. And we really hurried to get it out because of the timeliness of it, because of Passover.
Good. Okay. So you know what? So here we are. It's the eve of Passover. Why? There's so many topics that we're going to talk about on a lot of levels. But why is a discussion, the penultimate discussion of the red heifers in your new book, why is that so critical now before Passover?
Well, there's the Torah reason that it's topical at this time of year, and there's also the current events reason why it's topical at this time of year. The Torah reason is that the Jews traditionally read the section of the Torah, read it out of order just before Passover. The reason being, it was a reminder of the laws of purity which we needed to know or review just before Passover, because Passover we were bringing the Korban Pesach, we were bringing the Paschal Lamb, which is probably the most important Korban. I don't like to say sacrifice, but Korban means
offering.
Offering. It's the most important. That's, I like that. The most important offering of the year. So you have to be especially scrupulous about your ritual purity, your status. So we would review those laws by reading the section of the Torah having to do with the red heifer just before Passover. That's why we did it. I think we continue to do it as a reminder of what we should be doing, which is doing purity, doing offerings, something we're not doing these days. The reason why that's topical today for current events, what happened was the red heifers, there was an organization, Bona Israel, which was a cooperative effort between Jews and Christians, that brought over, they did a massive search for red heifers in Texas specifically. The Temple Institute had been searching for a red heifer for over a dozen years, and it's such an incredible rarity. There have only been 9 from Moses until the destruction of the temple, and they're seeking the 10th, which will purify us to build the temple. But it's so incredibly rare that the Temple Institute was not successful in finding one. And so Bona Israel took it upon themselves, and they found actually 5.
Right.
And they brought them over to Israel at the age of about 11 months. And that was in September of 2022. You were there, which I'm...
We were both there. It was remarkable.
We were both there. It's like, I mean, what struck me was even... I mean, you go to the cargo terminal of Ben-Gurion Airport. It's huge. It's like that last scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you just... this huge warehouse where holy items get lost. But the workers all came out.
That's exactly what impressed me.
Yeah. I was like, even these guys who are in the middle of their workday, and none of them struck me as being, you know, particularly religious in an obvious or blatant manner. And they all knew something was happening. You know, something special was happening. So
they all had their phones. They were filming.
It was special. Amazing. I mean, and I have to say, in the last year and a half, what I've seen is the red heifers have largely gone under the radar of most Orthodox Jews. And I get the impression that American Jews are intentionally disregarding and avoiding the subject.
Wait, say that again? Say that again?
I think I get the impression that American Jews, and especially Orthodox Jews, are intentionally disregarding, avoiding, trying their hardest not to see the red heifers.
Why do you get that impression? And
because I'll tell you, it's, oh gosh, there's so much we have to talk about. I think it's because when I was growing up, the Orthodox Jews all said, oh, we're in America now, but as soon as the Mashiach comes, as soon as Geula, the redemption comes, we're on a plane over to Israel. And they may not necessarily want to go to the bother. And the return of the red heifers would mean that there's a lot more to Judaism besides Shabbat, keeping kosher, family purity, the holidays. And the holidays would change drastically. We would go from, you know, going to the synagogue and doing whatever and eating something to remind everyone that we're still alive. And it would go to a temple-based religion. I get very frustrated. I love Passover. I get very, but Passover we should all be in Jerusalem eating the Passover offering.
Yeah.
The thing that drives me the craziest is Simchat Torah, because it's not Simchat Torah or Shavuot. Why is Shavuot drive me crazy? Here we are every day counting the Omer. One,
Shavuot,
two, three,
for those who are following, is Pentecost in English.
Christian. Right. And it's 50 days or 49, 7 complete weeks after Passover. We start counting after Passover, 1, 2, 3. And we know that at the end, we're supposed to bring the only time we bring leaven bread to the temple, the 2 loaves. And so we're counting 7 complete weeks, which is actually really difficult because, you know, you forget, you miss a day. But when we get to the 49th day, everyone's like, ha ha, you know, celebrating the giving of Torah. And I'm like, no, we're not. We're celebrating what we should be doing in the temple with the 7 complete weeks after Passover.
That's great.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy. The Jews don't want to change that. They want to continue with their what I call exile Judaism.
Okay.
They don't want to return to the temple.
So in fairness and defense of our American Jewish brethren, it's not only American Jews. We would apply that to diaspora.
Absolutely.
Okay,
and there are many. Rav Tui Weiss was telling me, I consider this a milestone in my career. He was flying back to Israel. He was sitting next to a Haredi Jew, and the stewardess came over, and she had a large gold cross. And she looked down at the Haredi man. Rav Tuli's not Haredi. He's clean shaven. And she looks down at the Haredi guy and she says, "Oh, are you an Orthodox Jew?" And he starts laughing because he's wearing black. He's got a hat. He's clearly Orthodox. And he's laughing. He's like, "Yeah." So she says, "Oh, so you know all about the red heifers that came over from Texas."
Wow.
And he looked at her. He's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And he kind of wrote it off as a crazy Christian. And Rav Tuli was like, "Oh, I know all about that."
Coincidentally, right, of course.
And it's what I call getting 126th, because it's Psalm 126, then the nations will say how great it is what God did for us. So we need the nations to wake us up.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
The nations, you know, I mean, the Christians brought over, devout Christians brought over the heifers, went to great effort and expense. And I'm finding so much interest among the Christians. If you go on YouTube, so many Christian channels. Chris Mitchell at CBN just did a story this week. And the Christians are all about it. And the Jews are kind of like, we don't want to hear about it.
Interesting.
It's fascinating.
That's a significant digression, but interesting topically. But I want to come back to something that you said. Go ahead.
If I can, you asked me why specifically this time of year.
Yes.
Okay.
You
unfortunately, Jonathan, you know, talking to me is like a meandering walk through the woods. What happened when the red heifers were brought over was, as we know, darkness, the klipot, the power of darkness jumps all over holiness and good things. So what happened was, and I think it was the 100th day anniversary of the October 7th attack, the Hamas spokesman came out and he said, the reason why we attacked Israel was because of the red heifers.
So they're following the news.
They're more than most Jews are. They said, we attacked Israel because they just brought over these red heifers and they're getting ready to storm the Temple Mount and tear down the Aqsa Mosque. They call the Dome of the Rock Aqsa Mosque, even though the Aqsa Mosque is the other structure. And Hezbollah, we just had on Sunday, there was a conference at Shiloh, right next to the Red Heifers, about the Red Heifers and about the possibility of doing a ceremony and what has to be done. and deep studies about it. And last year, when they sent out the flyer to invite people to the Conference of the Red Heifer, Hezbollah actually posted that flyer to their Telegram accounts to say, oh, you see, they're going to do the Red Heifer ceremony on Passover. So we've got to attack them now.
So there's been a lot of talk about whether that's going to happen this week on Passover. Not just from Hezbollah.
Right. I've heard a lot. The problem is misinformation is kind of crazy.
Okay.
So I speak directly to Rav Azaria Ariel, who is the son of Rav Yisrael Ariel, who founded the Temple Institute. Rav Azaria has been working on bringing back the red heifer for a dozen years. And it's, I mean, my gosh, it's not an easy task. The Rambam says it is the most enigmatic mitzvah in the Torah. And he's got to take a temple mitzvah and
it's the main commandments
and put it into a modern context. A lot of questions. I remember at the conference, you know, there's a problem because it's done on the Mount of Olives, and the Mount of Olives is a big cemetery, and that's a problem with ritual purity. So someone asked, can you go there by helicopter? It would solve a lot of problems. You just fly in, drop down, and you're not going anywhere near any graves. And it's a serious question. You know, can you go by helicopter? And also in the times of the temple, when they did the red heifers, they always had the ashes from the previous one. Except for the one that Moshe did. So they always had the ashes from the previous one, which made it much, much more simple because they could do the purity. So to jumpstart it, it's incredibly problematic. So there are questions like that that have never been asked before.
Okay, they have to answer. Okay, so we'll come to maybe more of those, but I wanted to come back and emphasize something which we know and is also somewhat esoteric, especially today in 2025. You mentioned earlier that this is the most important offering.
Passover offering.
And therefore, and it just clicked, it's obvious now, we have this whole concept in the Torah of, in Hebrew, Pesach Sheni, a second Passover observance a month later for people who were ritually impure and couldn't participate in that during the month of Nisan. And so this is a whole, it's not rabbinic, it's Torah, it's right out there. And that emphasizes that significance of the offering, doesn't it?
Yeah. Also, I want to emphasize the red heifer is not an offering. It's not
sacrifice. No, not the red heifer, the Passover offering.
Right.
The Passover offering. And we need the red heifer in order to be pure to participate in the Passover offering.
There are a lot of Torah prohibitions that if you do them, the punishment is karet, which is being cut off from the Jewish people. That's not really entirely clear, but we'll say it's been cutting off from the Jewish people. There are a lot of negative commandments, prohibitions, that if you do them, you get karet. But there are only two that are positive, that if you don't do them, you get karet. One is Brit Milah, and the other is Korban Pesach. If you don't
Brit Milah is circumcision.
Circumcision. And the other one is the Passover offering. That if you don't do it, you get karet, which is, you know, it's a big incentive to do it. And to be honest, Pesach Sheni, so the second Passover that comes, that you can do a month later, is actually not so relevant. I'll tell you why. And I apologize.
Now.
Right. Well, it could be. But I'll tell you why it's not relevant. And this is a very technical point that's actually very relevant to the red heifer. We are required to bring any time-bound offering, public offering, even if we are ritually impure. Jews are absolutely, we can only bring offerings in one spot. We don't need the temple, but it has to be in the place where the altar stood. That's the only place that an altar can stand now for us. But an altar is just a pile of loose stones. So we can just take up some stones, put them down, do the ritual, do the right offering
place.
In the right place, and then take the stones away and bring out a hose and wash it down, and we're done. We are required, not permitted. We are required to bring all of the public offerings that are time bound. And when we came back from Babylonia, the temple service was begun immediately, even though the temple was not built. The temple was not built for many years, but they began to bring all of the offerings. We are required even when we are ritually impure. So as we are sitting here today, Jews are required to bring the twice daily offering, the feast offerings, and we're also required to bring the Passover offering. If most of the nation is ritually impure, then you don't do Pesach Sheni. Everyone brings it on the first Passover. Why is that? So we're required. The only reason why we can't is because the government won't let us. So therefore, the sin of not bringing these offerings is on the government.
Okay. Well, okay.
Okay. So the question is, what do we need? So therefore, we are required to do the offerings even without the red heifer. So what does the red heifer, the ashes of the red heifer, do for us? It purifies us to bring the personal offerings, such as sin offerings, thanksgiving offerings, okay, which we can't do for ritually impure. Okay. What is another kind of offering that I cannot do until I have the red heifer? We all think that the temple will be like a big synagogue, where I go up and I see all my Jewish friends and I wave to them and we do stuff and the rabbi is feeling angry because he's out of a job. Not only is it going to be a petting zoo, but Rav Pesach Wilicki taught me about this. He's like, what's going to happen? I'm going to go up to the Temple Mount. When I get to the Western Wall and I wave to my friend Jonathan Beltstein, I'm like, you've got a little sheepy too. You're going to take up, and I've got some turtle doves, and ooh, I'm going to go up, and we're going to be really happy, and then I'm going to hear my friend, like Jim or Jonathan, Eliyahu, my dear Jewish friend. Oh yes, Jonathan, my evangelical friend. Jonathan will say to me, Eliyahu, could you do me a favor? I just had a grandson and I'm so happy. I want to bring something to Hashem to show him that I'm so happy. I want to bring something. Actually, he would probably say, I want to bring something to the Father because I'm so happy. And I'll be like, oh, Jonathan, if I'm going to do that, I have to go get purified by the ashes of the red heifer. But I'll be right back. And I'll go out and get purified by the ashes of the red heifer because it's a voluntary offering and I can't do it unless I'm pure. Wow. And then I'll come back, see my friend Jonathan, take his offering and take it up to the temple, give it to the Kohen, and he'll do it. So in order for the Christians to take part in the temple service, I need to become purified by the ashes of the red heifer.
And therefore, even though that's esoteric is not the right word, but maybe that's at a graduate level conversation as it relates to the red heifer. It's one of the reasons that you were seeing so many Christians so interested in this unraveling phenomena.
It is, but when the temple comes back next week, when the temple comes back, we're all going to have to up our game. It's not enough to read the Torah and then like forget all the rules of the temple. We're all going to have to up our game seriously because there is no messing around with it. I mean, everyone asks, why didn't they do the red heifer yet? And I'm like, because you got to do it right. You get one shot every 1,000 years. It better be right. And we're not going to cut corners. I mean, there's a concept of the Diavad, meaning, you know, if you don't have any choice and you mess up, what do? But this is a once in 1,000 years thing. So we got to get it right.
Okay.
And the whole temple is that way. We're going to have to up our game seriously.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that. You had mentioned, I forget what it was earlier, something about a misconception. It wasn't relating to Hamas and Hezbollah, but there are a lot of misconceptions that are kind of permeating all conversations. Tell to what degree are you discussing that in your book? And can maybe you list the top two or three?
Okay, my book is split into a couple sections. The first section, and I think the longest section, has to deal with all the details of the mitzvah itself. It's pretty much a Bible study, an in-depth Bible study. And that also dispels a lot of misconceptions, because I don't care, someone can state an opinion, but if you're stating Bible, it's not opinion.
Correct.
The Bible, you got to get it right. The second section has to deal with the current events, the arrival of the red heifers, what led up to that, what happened when they came, the whole thing about Hamas and Hezbollah. And the last section is more theological, how the heifers fit into Jewish eschatology, how it fits into Christian eschatology. I tried to write about the red heifers, past, present, and future.
A little Grinch Stole Christmas. Very nice.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, that's what it is. I mean, the red heifers, we read about it in the Torah, so it's past. And people think it stays there, but it's not. The Bible is the Torah is for us. It's a user's manual. And for how to use this world that was created using the Torah as a blueprint. So we have to do. That's the way Jews see it. And I think Christians are moving towards that.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war, because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
There was a documentary that was an article, it was a major documentary. And they actually, they showed a picture of an altar, a big white altar. And they said, oh, the Jews have already prepared the altar. That was actually a photograph of a, demonstration altar that was used for educational purposes. It was pretty big, but it was not even made of stone. And it was in, I think it's in Mitzpah Yericho. I always get the name confused. It's not even in Jerusalem. The red heifer, as I said, is sacrificed on the Mount of Olives. And it's not a sacrifice.
I was going to ask. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm glad you...
It's not a sacrifice because it's not offered in the temple. It's not offered on an altar. And it's not offered. It's more like we're using the red heifer to create ashes that we can use for a specific purpose, i.e. to purify ourselves. That's another thing that a lot of people get wrong. It's burned on a huge pyre of wood. So a lot of people say, it's inciting the Arabs. And I'm like, why? It's nowhere near the Temple Mount. It's nowhere near the Arab sites that they claim are holy. So are you going to say that Jews cannot do anything anywhere that is our religion?
Right.
You know, it's right. you got to let it. So to say that it incited Arabs is ignoring the fact that there's no, they have no claim to be incited.
Well, we can state that about 99.999% of the things about which they get incited. And by the way, we should also, for accuracy, it's not just Arabs, it's Muslims, because there'll be people in Indonesia.
You'd be surprised. They politicize the Temple Mount. Saudi Arabians are not allowed to pray in the mosque on the Temple Mount.
Really?
Saudi Arabians, Arabs from the UAE, anyone who signed the Abraham Accords, the Palestinians.
Really?
Really. Also, when they go to Hebron, they're not allowed to go to the Arab side. They have to go to the Jewish side. It's not religious. It's political.
According to the Islamic Waqf that controls.
Yes.
Wow.
They put out a fatwa.
But so if Indonesia signs a peace accord with Israel, then Indonesians, as the largest Muslim country in the world, also won't be able to pray there. Wow.
Correct. I wonder how much power the Waqf is actually going to have over the holy sites after this war is over, because Palestinians have just been rejected wholesale by the entire Arab world, except for Qatar. So I wonder, but it's not religious. It's political. And their anger is not religious. It's political. But to say that the red heifers incite, I remember last year, in the month of Elul, which is the month leading up to Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, we blow shofar every morning.
Yes.
And there were some Jews who, I remember Rav Glick, he had an app that was a shofar, and he played it, and the police kicked him off. And then there was off outside of the Temple Mount, there was an Arab cemetery.
Yeah.
And they started blowing shofar there, and the police said, "Oh, no, you can't do that," and they arrested them. And the judge looked at them, and he said, "Are you telling me that Jews can't blow shofar anywhere in Jerusalem?"
The British used that as a pretense in the 20s under the incitement of the Mufti and Arabs here as well.
Right.
Blowing shofar anywhere near the Temple Mount.
Right. So the red heifer is actually, I would say, kind of like a test case. You know, if we can't do the red heifer on the Mount of Olives, so what are they saying to us? And also, like, sorry, but, and I love my Christian friends, but you know something? This is our service to Hashem. You know, you can't be telling us what we can and can't do. I don't
We are Christians telling us what we can and can't do in terms of.
Well, not devout Christians.
Okay.
Like I said, the devout Christians tend to be on our side with this.
I see.
But non-Jews, what right do they have to come in and tell us, especially in Israel, to tell us, oh, you can't do this? So it's just like, this is what the Christians have a lovely expression, cafeteria religion, meaning you take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We don't have cafeteria religion. We don't have that option. We have to do what
if we're doing it right. There are
if we're doing it right.
There are Jews who feast at the cafeteria.
We can't say, oh, I opt out of the ashes of the red heifer. We can't do that. And we can't even stop trying, even if we can't do it. So we're going to keep trying, and we really can't walk away from it. So
Who's your book written for more? Christian? Is it average Jew or an average Christian going to digest it the same?
I wish more Jews would read it. But I don't have high hopes for that. There are a significant number of Christians who pay very careful attention to the details. And I've been corrected by a lot of Christians on details. So it's basically, yes, they're interested in the current events and the arrival of the red heifers, but I can see a lot of Christians just on the level of Bible study, you know, intensive Bible study of one of the more obscure commandments. And which is crazy because they are not supposed to, they Christians do not become ritually impure. They don't go up to the temple. There was a fence around and Jews went past and Christians stayed on the outside and we would act as their priests.
Not Christians, not Gentiles.
Gentiles. So the red heifer will allow us to take on the biblically mandated role of being a priests for the nation.
Yeah.
Where just as the priests go further for bringing my offering, I will go further in order to bring the Gentiles' offering. So it isn't relevant to them. But as I said, there seems to be a lot more interest in the Christian world, especially if you go on YouTube and you do a search for red heifer. There are unbelievable number of videos. A lot of them are fake news. There was one, there were these guys wearing, you know, hunting camouflage gear, drinking beers with the you know, trucking hats, and they're just like spouting absurd things, and that got 500,000 views. Wow. I was just like, wow, that's kind of scary. But there are a lot of very amazing ministries that that are studying the red heifer. I'd like to know why. I'd be fascinated. But as I said, there are ministries doing it. I don't know any synagogues in America that are like talking about the red heifer as a practical commandment.
As something that is as connected to the redemption for which we're also praying
we're watching play out in real time.
Yeah. It's a good question. That would be an interesting discussion, and maybe go back to your comment earlier in terms of diaspora Jews being less connected to this.
Coming back to Israel, it's really a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. And it's a lot of like, I know I'd rather live in, you know, Oregon and ride a motorcycle. You know, when I think about all the places I'd love to live in the world, there are a lot of places I'd love to live, but there's only one place that I'm allowed to live.
Wow.
If I want to be a servant to Hashem. Okay. And it happens to be the Golan. So that's the difference, I think.
Okay. You and I were both there
in
September of 22 when the red heifers arrived. Really magnificent. I wrote and published and spoke about that experience, about being overwhelmed and how overwhelmed I was with that circumstance. I would imagine that you knew a whole lot more about the red heifers than I did going into that moment.
I'd been covering a lot of stories, but the stories I'd been covering up until then were like a farmer, literally, I think in Baja in Mexico, found the red heifer and he had a rabbi go check it out. Mm. There was another farmer. Oh my gosh, this gentleman was so sweet. He was a devout Christian. He said, you know, I just learned in church the other day about the red heifer. And then I go out to my backyard and I noticed that one of my little calves who was born a couple months ago was red.
Yeah.
And he had a rabbi go check him out. So until the red heifers arrived in Israel, people were searching, but there was no real organized effort. Though there were also a few times that I went along with Rav Ariel when he went to check cows out in the
Golan. Okay.
And that was an interesting experience because they actually have to, they have, you know, a flash, a magnifying glass with a light on it. And they literally have to check every single hair.
Right.
Every single hair on the animal, because right. It can only have one non-red hair, and two non-red hairs makes it unsuited. And also they were very careful. I wrote about them, about them checking it out, but the location had to be kept secret, very secret,
okay.
Because there are a lot of powers out there that would rather the temple not return. and we were concerned that they would
come
along. It really takes very little to disqualify the cow.
Sure.
Any blemish, you can just walk up with a nail and go, and it's disqualified. You can lean on it, and it becomes disqualified.
As remarkable and miraculous as Israel is, and its very existence a testimony to God's faithfulness, in many ways, Israel's like most other countries. Just as there are parents anywhere who have stronger and weaker parenting abilities, and adults become a product of situations in their lives that they cannot control, making their ability to raise and care for their own children even harder, that's true in Israel as well. The Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation is committed and takes the mandate seriously to care for the least of these, our brothers, our children. We're committed to bless and strengthen orphans and at-risk youth, to invest in them, to empower them, so that their future will be brighter than their past or their present. But Israel is unique in that there are always threats of war and terror which know no bounds. For children who come from homes that are not safe, sometimes the very scary reality of living in a community that's not safe is too much to bear. We are committed to turning orphans and at-risk youth into children of promise. We fund a variety of programs to help those most in need as widely as we can. We invite and encourage you to join us today so that we can ensure their brighter tomorrow. Please visit genesis123.co to find out more and to send your love and most generous donation today.
Of the five that arrived in September of 22, am I correct in remembering that four are still eligible?
No.
No?
No. Rav Ariel, this is a little bit technical, so I have to give the disclaimer. You cannot quote me as saying that none of the cows are kosher, are suited. What you can say is, as Rav Ariel put it, we cannot say that at this time we have a heifer that is suited for the ritual.
Okay.
In order to be suited, the cow has to be certified, i.e. checked.
Okay.
And it has to have all of the requirements. One of the requirements is that it's 2 years and one day, because the term in the Torah is para aduma, which is a red cow. Less than 2 years is a calf, an egla. Okay. So until they were 2 year old, you couldn't even ask if they were suited. You could check to see if they had hairs.
Okay.
Since then, there have been clearly non-red hairs on, and there was one that kind of hung in there. But they still have to study. There is one obscure reference that may leave one of the cows suited.
Okay.
But they have to do a study, and it's not going to be like a day or two. Okay. And the problem is that as the cows get older, there is a greater chance that they grow non-red hairs.
Yeah, like me. So, look at me. Look at all my young.
I used to be blonde. So that's the situation as it stands. So we don't have one that's kosher right now. However, those particular cows if they become totally unsuited, they can use it for a breeding program.
Yes.
Because that would be a great way to start the breeding program, the Red Angus. And it's actually relatively easy to bring over the seed from the bull. They freeze it and put it in an ice chest and bring it to Israel. Regular breeding programs do that. There's also a question they have to, and they were beginning to look into it when they found the five heifers. They were beginning to look into genetic manipulation.
That's fascinating. That's going to have a lot of rabbis talking whether you can do that or not.
I'm waiting for them to have
to
do genetically modified shrimp that have scales and fins. So I can't.
Oh, man. Shrimp's not that great.
But that's also a question. But it has to be asked, investigated, and answered. And that's not a simple process. Okay. It's not overnight.
Go ahead.
So we don't have one suited right now,
but those are questions.
And to what extent are you addressing this in your book? Because we're not going to get...
I mention it. I do not go into depth because there is no answer right now.
Okay, so maybe we'll do a follow-up on that because I want to begin to wrap up. But this is fascinating. And you did prove my point that in September of 22, you knew a lot more than I did in terms of the red heifers. But here's my question, and to begin to wrap up. In writing the book, I said it in the intro, you're eclectic, you're knowledgeable on a whole lot of things. But writing the book, you had to have learned some new things. So what did you, Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz, learn new in writing the book as a teaser to get people to come and buy your book and read it?
To be honest, I'm learning an awful lot more from the interviews I'm doing.
Okay.
People ask great questions. I've learned so much from our discussion. You know, it depends who interviews you. Some people, if they don't have very good intentions and they're not really interested, they have an agenda, then you don't learn anything.
Okay.
But you are such a curious person, seeking the truth, that any dialogue with you, I walk away smarter than I went in, even if I'm supposed to be the expert that wrote the book. But you're inside as well. You're not an outsider, and it was a very enlightening discussion. So I'm learning a lot more from that book I was actually most, it was very easy to write. It was because I knew everything I was going to write. The interviews, I learned an awful lot from the questions. At that, I'd like to say, anyone who wants to interview me, anyone who wants to talk to me, I'll go on video with you.
Good. Okay. So for the record, and that includes the Al Jazeera, Hamas, Hezbollah people who are following this conversation. We should say salam aleikum to you, and come have Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz, as they say in the South in America, learn you. Yeah, that would be a great. I would love to see you on Al Jazeera.
You know what's funny? In their articles, they got almost all of it right.
Do they?
I mean, their intention? Yeah, they're
manipulative.
Yeah, of course, and they have bad intentions. But they got most of their they got more facts right than that documentary that was done by an American news organization, a big one.
Interesting.
They researched, and they got it much righter.
Okay.
Than the Americans.
Good to know. Okay. So here goes. This is what I like to do with some guests at the end of the interview, at the end of the conversation. What do we not discuss? You're not doing shameless promotion of your book, but let's remind people it's called Return of the Red Heifers. And before I forget, because I'm not good at this, where do people get Return of the Red Heifers?
Well, there is a link. You can get it on the Israel 365 store, or you can get it on Amazon. Okay. The Kindle is not yet available, and in my spare time, I'm trying to do an audiobook, so that can
excellent. I love that. Okay, so what do we discuss now? What's missing? What's the last thing that we haven't discussed that you want to put out there for people to know?
I've been writing articles about, 9 years ago, I sat in front of Thule. I was desperate for a job. And he said, write about, Geula, about the redemption that is appearing in Israel. And I was like, sure, I'd love to do that. And inside I'm going, that's crazy. Nothing is happening for redemption. It's been 2,000 years. Give me a break. And there have been very few days that I have not found the story about redemption. When I first started, people were like, oh, it happens all the time. No one's questioned since COVID. People got a new grasp on reality. They realized we're in a new reality, headed towards something that's unprecedented, something powerful. So what am I looking forward to? I sincerely have absolutely no idea.
Excellent. Good.
The field is so open. But anything, if you tell me, we have everything ready to allow for the temple service. If the government says start, we could start the temple service in 3 hours. Everything is ready. Everything is ready. We could bring the Passover offering this year. No problem. There'd be a big rush on on cheap, but maybe we could airlift from New Zealand. I don't know, but everything is open. Everything is possible. We've never been closer, and we're really, really close. Everyone makes a big deal about the red heifer. That's only one small part of the big puzzle that's almost finished. We're that close.
I love that. Thank you. And what a great way to go into. I mean, we're having this conversation coincidentally
before Passover,
but yeah. To go into that as we're preparing, as we're cleaning, as we're cooking, and looking for the signs of. I mean, it's a different kind, but the signs of that redemption.
Yeah, at the end of the Seder, we always say, you know, Shana Abba Birushalayim next year in Jerusalem. I mean, we're living in an age which, for me, that's a bus. A bus, or I get my option, either a bus or a train. Amazing. You know, and now they have a train going from, the train will be going from the airport to the Temple Mount. So, everyone is that close. Everyone is that close.
I love that. What a great way to wrap up. Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz, dear friend, provocative thinker and great writer. Everyone get the book, Return of the Red Heifers. I'm looking forward to getting a copy myself. Thank you for joining.
Come for coffee, I'll give it to you.
All right. Well, maybe we need to have some lamb. I don't know.
Barbecue.
Okay. As we've always done at the conclusion of our episodes, we want to give you an opportunity for a way of thanking you for sticking with us and listening to these entire conversations. A special gift. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. Since September of 23, we've been offering our new book. Well, it's no longer new. It's a year and a half. Israel the Miracle. And all we
have... Is that beautiful, beautiful coffee table book that you...
Beautiful, beautiful, stunning coffee table book.
It is stunning. It is literally stunning.
So for the last 18 months, we've been giving out a copy of that. And all we ask that you do in order to get your free copy this month is like and comment or share the link to this program. And every month we're picking one person at random to receive a free copy of Israel the Miracle as our gift to you. And thank you for that unsolicited recommendation.
It is stunning. It really is. When you first showed it to me, wow, you did it right.
Thank you so much. We're always grateful that this podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, I encourage you to pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to the Coyne family as well for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue building bridges and dialogues like this. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, or your favorite new book about the red heifers, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as well as part of an ongoing dialogue, and invite you to send any questions as part of this dialogue, the conversation, specifically questions you have about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.
Amen. Hallelujah.